Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Going Old School Show. Chips, Joe, and Crow here for you. Without Crow, it's a two-headed monster. Joe Ferrin is joining me on blogtalkradio.com. It is Wednesday, May 4th of the year 2022. The Going Old School Show. Chips and Joe here for you. We'll talk some NBA a little bit later. We'll get into some baseball. We'll maybe give a Boston Bruins take because I'm sure Joe's chomping at the bit with a must game tonight in Carolina against the Hurricanes. But without further ado, he's a good friend of the show, so we want to talk a little bit of football, but mostly about his off the field stuff. And we know he dabbles in a bunch of stuff. But let's welcome in two-time Super Bowl champion, former Patriots defensive lineman, our good friend Jarvis Green. Jarvis, John, and Joe here in New England. How you doing, my friend?
Hey guys, I'm doing pretty good. How y'all doing?
Can't complain.
Doing well, Joe.
Jarvis, I'm a big Honey Badger guy. Kansas City Chief guy, goes back home to LSU, anchors the defense. We talked about a safety being that field general. What's the feeling like down there, knowing that the Honey Badge is going to back where he played his college ball?
I mean, I've been listening to the radio a bunch down here. Everybody's excited. The city is very happy. I know some of the local radio stations was talking about the Saints moving up in the rankings in the NFC South with the Honey Badger there. I think a lot of people are very happy because I know I heard stuff about him and also the fact that, you know, they gave Jameis Winston a contract extension. So I think everybody's happy. Honey Badger also growing up, you know, playing at St. Augustine. So for a lot of people that don't know, Leonard Fournette played at St. Augustine as well.
Mm-hmm.
After the Honey Badger. So, you know, St. Augustine, all-boys school, a lot of big guys went on to play college ball and professional ball and football. But him just to be back in the city of New Orleans, I think everybody's very excited, and they think that they have a shot against Tampa this year, but also just to win the NFC South.
Well, Jarvis, you stayed with the New Orleans Saints. Well, they traded some picks and traded some for Chris Olave, and their second pick was Trevor Penning. So they gave Winston another offensive weapon to go with Michael Thomas if Michael Thomas comes back, and they gave him an offensive lineman, give him some more protection. So you think, you know, what's your opinion? You think they'll be able to overtake Tampa Bay this year?
Now. The lineman they drafted, wasn't that the big, strong guy they drafted from a small school, or was that?
Yeah.
I'm a little confused.
Yeah, well, it was Penning. He's a small school. He's a big, strong guy. He's like, so they're expecting him to at least possibly go for the starting spot this year, but
I think the guy was squat over 650 pounds. And
yep.
He was just a man child. I think that's what you really need, because I mean, if you have a great guard, great left tackle, a blindside tackle, I think the quarterback has a better chance to perform and play better football. So I think with him in the draft and also picking up Tyrann Mathieu, it's a big ups for the Saints, and you know, it's going to help them in the NFC South. And I mean, that's what the draft is for. That's what free agency is for, to get those key players. But again, you know, drafting a local hometown talent, hometown hero like Tyrann to come back, I mean, that's going to be very exciting for the state of Louisiana.
Jarvis Green, former Patriots defensive lineman, joins Joe Foran and myself, Johnny Sunships, here on the Going Old School Show. Jarvis, you mentioned Tyrann Mathieu, but I mean, if you're the defense of the Tampa, well, if you're New Orleans Saints, you've beaten the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady four straight times in a regular season. So, I mean, if you're building your team, do you want to build your team to beat the top dog? And I think that's what I think it bodes well for them, because if the defense continues to do what they do against Brady, and Mathieu has had success against him, beat with Kansas City against New England, I mean, if you get your offense in order, then, you know, you're going to be competitive against Tampa. And if you're competitive, then you have a chance to win that NFC South.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think that's the name of the game, you know, getting key players, signing guys, making sure guys have a long stay with one team. in free agency, I mean, it's just so much that goes on. I mean, I haven't kept up really with it this year. I mean, I watched some of the draft and also kind of heard some stuff here and there, but not really into it. But again, I mean, that's a big deal, you know. And it's funny that we're sitting here talking about the NFC South way in New England, but, you know, we all have ties to Tom Brady in some way, somehow, and also myself on the other side, being retired, playing from the Patriots, but also just being a Saints fan and being a Tom Brady fan. So you know, I know for me, like, you know, being retired, I have three teams that I always watch. That's New England, that's New Orleans, and that's Tampa Bay now.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of New England, Jarvis, did you get to watch any of McVay's reaction to the Patriots in Strange, the offensive lineman, with their first pick? Did you see any of that reaction?
No, I haven't, but I heard they said the Patriots had the worst draft had the worst draft outcome for this draft season, correct?
Yeah, but McVay was sitting there with his guru in the draft room, and he's like,
"Oh, you know what? I did see that somewhere across. It went across my phone that they was cracking up about that. So
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, why did they do that? Because of O'Donnell? I mean, what?
Well, they did it because they were like, well, they don't have a first and second round pick, but they were like, oh, and we were going to watch this guy for the 104th pick. They were laughing because Strange was rated maybe a third or fourth round pick, and Patriots picking him at number 29. I mean, a lot of people are saying that was an extreme reach, but also after the draft, they were saying that Strange was actually moving up the board and was expected to go maybe middle second, so it wasn't as much of a reach as they said, but it's just the fact of McVay's lighting a candle under somebody's ass that you really don't want to, because you know Bill doesn't forget anything. And it's like, you know, I get it. They earned the right to laugh because they won the championship. But, you know, that Bill might use that as a bulletin board material himself just to get the Patriots there.
Yeah, I agree. That could be it. That could be it, definitely. I guess, you know what? They're probably happy that he's laughing now, but, I mean, he won the championship, so he deserved that. Yep. Of course, you know, Bill won, you know, six here, and Bill doesn't laugh and chuckle in that type of nature to his other opponents. So, like you said, I know Bill's watching that. So it's great just to see what happens this year.
Ocean's 97 CEO Jarvis Green joined us here on the Golden Rule 2. So, Jarvis, quarterback of the Patriots, one Mac Jones. I mean, second year, and I want to get your take, and if you can go back to your days of playing, you know, because quarterbacks go from college to pros, and they kind of sneak up on defenses because there's not a lot of game film on them at the pro level. And I think the second year is where, and talking about Mac Jones here, I mean, this is a year where teams have tape on them. They try to point out his weaknesses and expose them. Back in the day when you played, were the quarterbacks that you faced the first year that you were able to defend the second year better because you saw how they worked on the field and were able to get coached up against them?
Yeah, I mean, that was part of it. You know, you watch a guy. We all get film, you know. We all get film. That's like a deal that everybody has to do, and you got to give, you know, your recent film. And sometimes, you know, Bill, he wants film to go further back in the weeks just to get, you know, ups on who he's playing against and also just the opponent. But, you know, the quarterbacks, I mean, like Bill always say too, you never stay the same. You get better or worse. So you play the guy that year, and then the next year you play him again, you kind of understand what his weaknesses are. And also, if you've never seen him on film yet, you're going to have to really, like, prepare for everything. But then as they play, you know, that same song, everybody has tendencies. As human beings, we all have tendencies as well.
So I know you said you have three teams you like to watch, but as a football fan, the division to watch this year seems to be my cohorts, Mr. Ahern's AFC West, because it seems like all the best quarterbacks are sitting right now in the AFC West, with Russell Wilson going to the AFC West, with Mahomes, Herbert. It just seems like that will be the division to watch this year as far as quarterback play.
Yeah, it has to be, man. That West is strong. I mean, so much going on, so much talent. Herbert, I mean, you know what? For Herbert, watching him play, it's like that guy, you hear everything about the Tom Brady, and I know if you're New England there, you hear about Matt Jones. But Herbert, that guy been playing lights out, man. And I don't know what kind of strength or weaknesses that he has for his receivers, tight ends, running backs, or even a defense. But he's putting numbers up. He's a tremendous quarterback, and that's a tough division. On top of that, you got Mahomes, you know, richest quarterback in the league, young quarterback, young gunslinger. And, I mean, and then also you got the old guy from Detroit now that won a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And it's just so much going on. So I got to say for next year that AFC West is going to be division, and that one of those guys on that division will be in the AFC Championship game.
Jarvis Green joins us here for a few more minutes. Jarvis, one more football question before Joe and I take you into the year. What are you doing in your business ventures, which you're doing a lot, so we'll get into that. But final football question, I want to go back to the Saints. A guy named Sean Payton, 15 years, the longest tenured head coach with the Saints. Obviously, he shouldn't pay for another drink or meal in that area ever again with what he's done. But I don't live there, but how revered is he in New Orleans, much less Louisiana, with what he's done with that team and to keep them competitive and bringing them Super Bowl championship? Because they were nothing, basically, before he got there.
I mean, he's definitely a saint, man. You know, he's going to be up there with the Pope. The diocese, the Catholic Church. He's going to be pretty much on the same level as those guys. I don't know, man. I mean, everybody remember what's his name? The playoffs.
Oh, yeah, Jim Mora.
Yeah. Jim Mora. And, I mean, I remember watching the Saints growing up, and I loved Jim Mora. And when he made that comment, it was so funny and hysterical. But then, you know, you got Sean Payton coming out of the Bill Parcells tree, coming to the Saints. And you know what? I'm going to say this, man. The Saints won one Super Bowl. I was at that Super Bowl game in Miami when they beat the Colts. But I think the Saints had a chance to win at least two more Super Bowls, you know, from the NFC Championship game when the rookie guy missed the tackle. And he was having a tremendous year, and he missed that against Minnesota. And then the next year or whatever, the few years down the road when they had a pass interference that should have been called and the receiver got pushed out or whatever. So they had their chances, you know. But I mean, I just hope right now the new coach that's there that he can stay consistent but also get further in the playoffs, you know. Because I know, like me, I'm an underdog guy. I love the underdog. I love Jameis Winston. And I felt so bad for him. When he got injured that game, and it was against LSU, one of our LSU guys, White, you know, trying to tackle him, you know. So I just hope Jameson can come back strong with rehab and have a tremendous year, because he was on pace to do a lot of greatness down here in New Orleans. And also I was just happy because everybody can stop all that riffraff about him stealing the crab fingers, you know, the crab claws, you know.
Yeah.
So, Jarvis, I'm excited. I know you are, to be bringing Chef to you across the nation, across the states, and it seems like you guys are getting pretty close to doing that in Massachusetts now. So tell us a little bit about Chef to you.
You know what? We got some stuff coming up. I can't really say what's going on right now in Mass, but I know we coming that way. Hopefully we got some summer events. Right now in Florida, we kind of backed away a little bit. So in Florida, if you go to the malls, we do have our banners up, our ads, because right now we're just trying to get a lot of downloads. So when we first started, I think it was more about trying to test the waters to see how it would go. But I think we need more downloads in the Florida area right now. But we will be in Massachusetts pretty soon. I think the biggest thing for us with Chef to You is that we're working on our courier service. Mm-hmm. So once we get that interface downloaded in the app, I think we have more of an advantage, because right now, I'm going to say, and this is not like a lie, we have right now about 600 chefs across the country that has downloaded the app. or once we have a courier service set up, you know, and then it depends on the city, how big the city is as well. Because you can't just go in there and have 10 chefs and have one driver. So it has to be a certain amount on the platform that we can go into that city and cut the green light on, you know, or say go. So that's all coming together, man. So, but again, we have a lot of things going on. I mean, I have so much going on that positive with Oceans 97. I have another company called United Oceans. It's an arm of Oceans 97 that we're working on some government things that's been going on for 2 years, and now tuition. A lot of things are coming together now. Things are working out. Ocean 97. I mean, you know, I've been doing a lot of shrimp boils during the summer.
Yep.
So I just had one at Texas A&M Corpus Christi, Lamar University, Houston University, Texas A&M College Station. So it's just so much, man. I wish I could be doing more and more, but things are coming together. We're building a great, you know, foundation for Ocean 97 to do more things in the future, and also, you know, when it comes to sustainability and traceability in the seafood industry.
Awesome. Oceans97.com, lots of stuff there, lots of recipes, and it'll tell you a little bit about Jarvis and his work ethic. And Chef to You, the app, it's out there, Jarvis, man. You're all over the place, and we appreciate and we admire, at least selfishly speaking, your work ethic, because you're nose to the ground, and you're not afraid to get your hands dirty, and that's the kind of blue-collar guy, which kind of people loved about you in this region, including the two who are talking to you right now, Jarvis. Listen, always a pleasure. Keep in touch as we always do, and we'll look forward to seeing and speaking to you again. And, hey, those cigars are still here, so if we can have a cigar at some point, you know where to reach us as well, and we'll do the same to you.
Yes, sir, guys, and thank you again for the invitation. I'll talk to you all soon.
Thanks, Jarvis.
Yes, sir.
Be well, Jarvis. Take care. Be safe. Well, be safe. Jarvis Green, former Patriots defensive lineman, two-time Super Bowl champion, and he's Chef to You, entrepreneur, Ocean 97. He does it all. Go on Ocean97.com. I'm a big pate fan, recipes, and so forth. Before we bring Lou on, Joe, you want to say something about that?
Obviously, it's always great to talk to Jarvis. Guy's a great guy. Man is from the heart. He's a worker. Love the guy. Love his work ethic. Reminds me of me of, like, work ethic. They're just nonstop. And let's bring on the lovable loser. I mean, Jets fan, if you may.
Go ahead. Go ahead. You say what you want, Lou, because I'll go ahead.
Very funny. Very funny.
How you doing, Lou? Thanks for holding.
Yeah. Lou, thanks for the lovable loser comment. Look, I think
say what you want. It's good to talk to you. Take my jabs. It's all in good jest talking to you. We appreciate you calling in. So
of course you do.
Nothing else.
Okay.
What's on your mind, Lou?
Well, you know, I think we did well this year because, you know, because the problem with the Jets is because they always went for, like, you know, the top quarterback, the top running back and whatnot. They were going for what they were wanted, not necessarily what they needed. You know, they were looking in the wrong positions because it's our defense and our special teams that are, you know, pitiful, and that's what we need to go after. I mean, we can't always go after the top quarterbacks from the top school because every time we get that, we get in a lot of trouble. And, you know, what they look good on paper and the scouting reports, it hasn't translated onto the field. So this time, you went in another direction, and I think maybe this time I can pay off. At least I'm hoping it will.
Lou, I'm going to tell you this right now, and listen to me. Right now, I'm ranking the teams in the AFC East right now on paper, right now today. A lot could change in a couple months, much less August. Buffalo Bills, number one. The Miami Dolphins are two. The New York Jets are number three, and the Patriots now sit as the last team in the division. That's my opinion. You guys won the draft. You won it over New England. And so the talent's there. You coach it up, and I think you got the right pieces in place, coaching and GM-wise. I'm not down on Salah. Because I think he's given the pieces, protect the quarterback. I think the Jets are, in fantasy football, you guys are thumbs up. And, you know, Kudo, you should be excited for your team, man. It's a building block.
I'm ready for it.
It's going to take years, and you started it off the right way, the way you should, with four dynamite picks in the top two rounds.
Look, you got Ahmed God, you got Garrett Wilson, you got Jermaine Johnson, two. Three of the best picks of round one overall. Look, they were basically fitted the best overall draft in round one around. Whether it translates to the field or not, I'm, unlike my partner in crime over there, have the Patriots number three and Jets four. But the Jets are a team to deal with now. They're a team to reckon with. They are a young and upcoming team that could sneak up on people this year, and don't sleep on that. It's like people can't sleep on the Jets anymore. They're an up-and-coming team. I'll give them that much.
Good. It's nice to see that people are thinking, positive thoughts about the Jets finally. Because the last couple of years with our projected quarterbacks, they let us down. They let us down in a hurry.
Exactly. But the good thing is, and you know, sometimes building from ground level is good, but you change the culture. I think it's changing. You get winners in there. You get big people. And you're still in the New York metropolitan area. And when the Jets are good and the Giants are good, they're good for football. And I think both of the teams in New York really stepped the game up. So I think you've got a lot to be excited about. And it's going to give you reason as a Jets fan to wake up every Sunday morning and watch this team. I'm telling you, that's, just from a football standpoint, I think you're in good shape, and I hope you enjoy it. But
as a podcaster and a host, I think it makes it even more special because, you know, I'm doing what I've always wanted to do, and now I get to cover my teams and take the notes and everything. So it's like a double victory for me.
Exactly. Speaking of podcasts, the Enhanced Sports Podcast, which you co-host, tell us about it. Where people can find you.
All right. Well, first of all, do not look for me on Blog Talk Radio because that's where most of you make your mistakes because you're thinking, hey, I can't find it anywhere. So don't look for that there. Go for Uber. The site I told you about, Dialpad. The number is 512-543-4662. I'll repeat that again, 512-543-4662. We're going to cover, of course, the playoffs, as you well know. We're going to take a look at the baseball standings. We got some NFL news we got to catch up on because there's more news coming out. And it's also in the Kentucky Derby because that starts that's on Saturday, the first of the Triple Crown. Oh, boy. And Sunday is Mother's Day, so I'm encouraging all you mothers out there, whether you're a mom or a mom-to-be, to call on the show. So I hope you can do that. Guys, you're welcome, too.
Hey, Lou, what podcast site are you on? You're not on Blog Talk, right, you said?
No. I'm on the it's called Dialpad Meetings. But just call the number like you have. I mean, because the only way you can get into that is if you're a member of the site. So that's the thing that people get thrown off. Like, where can I find it? You can only do that if you're a member. And I'm one of the few members on there.
Beautiful.
Just dial
Sounds
the number,
good.
And I'll get you in.
You got it.
Lou, I want a shout-out Sunday because that'll be my 35th year anniversary of being married. And it's Mother's Day, and I'm heading out the day after Mother's Day to New Hampshire. But, no, and look, you know I'm a diehard Pats fan, but when you look at Elijah Moore, Garrett Wilson, Zach Wilson, C.J. Uzma, and Michael Carter as your starting receivers and running back, you have some talent there in your skill positions. So you've got talent. Let's see what we can do with it. And look, it should be an exciting season.
It should be.
Lou, thanks for your time, man. Appreciate you, buddy. Always a pleasure. Thanks for holding. I appreciate that.
All right. Hopefully you'll call too. Thanks a lot.
You got it, man. Take care.
All right.
I'm usually working when Lou's on the air. But that's Lou from New Jersey. He's been our P1 for quite some time. I love it. It's good to talk some Jets football, and it's good. Yeah, dude, it's all good in conversation. We agree to disagree, but that's fun. But it's always but I do have those rankings. One Patriot thing, Joe, I'm telling you, I think the Patriots could legitimately go 1-5 in the division this year. I think Buffalo's beating them twice. I think Miami can beat them twice. And I think the Jets going to beat the Patriots once. Again, it's all this is all can change in a matter of a month or two.
I am hoping, John, that Bill has something up his sleeve because he best have something up his sleeve because if he doesn't, we are dangerously thin at linebackers right now. We don't have any outside linebackers depth-wise. We don't have enough speed depth-wise. So unless he's got something up his sleeve, he better pull the rabbit out of the hat. And look,
well,
I get it. It's just...
Go ahead. Finish your thought.
No, for argument's sake, I just think it's three. But if they finished in dead last, it wouldn't shock me. It really wouldn't.
Right. But by something up his sleeve, do you mean bringing players in or schematically? Because we don't know about the coaching staff. That on paper, that's a mess. Again, everything's on paper. The draft didn't seem to work out well, but you're not going to know about the draft a couple years later. I don't know if they have enough weapons around Mac Jones in his second year. So, I mean, what could he possibly do? Because if the talent's not on the field, in my opinion, it's going to be tough to coach him up. So,
I agree. So, is there any unrestricted free agents that they signed? Remember, J.C. Jackson was an unrestricted free agent.
Right.
And if they found any gems in the rough, or if there's any free agents to be out there, they can sign at least for a year to get us by till next year. I don't know. It's just that the defense fell off a cliff, and they were looking decent, but you can say who they were playing is one thing. But, I mean, they literally fell off a cliff. So, look, the coaching staff is a complete mess. That's organized chaos at best.
Right.
So, we got a lot of work to do, and it's like, it could get ugly this year. But, you know, I'll find out just how diehard Patriot fans are when the bandwagon gets awfully thin, and I'm still on it.
Oh yeah, well you're old school. You're a true fan. You're not a pink hat. We won't get into that pink hats because I know how you feel, but you're old school and you'll always be a fan. Through the thick and thin, yeah. So, but there'll be plenty of football talk coming up on the old school show. Joe Foran, Johnny Sunship's here. Minus John Crow. Hope he's doing well. He's here in spirit, part of the old school podcast. I spoke with him last night, so we're doing a double dip here. And Joe Foran will join me on Wednesday, our old hump day show. So if you want to call us for the next half hour, because we're going to dive into the basketball, specifically Celtics Bucks, you can at 515-602-9730. It is 6:27 p.m., May 4th of the year, 2022. We are live, coming to you on Blog Talk Radio. But let's get into the Celtics, Joe, because about as close to a must-win as possible last night. And, hey, you know what? They went up 23-8 by 15 points early on, and they never looked back. And your thoughts, because a little character test last night, a little litmus test, can they bounce back from adversity? And they did it, and they did it in a big way, Joe. Your thoughts on last night's Celtics evening up the series going into Saturday's Game 3?
Look, it was a much-needed win without Marcus Smart. And, look, they took the gut punch. They got beat on badly in Game 1. They came out, and they made a statement. Granted, it was like they took 10 less three-pointers, and as their coach said, you know, you're not Kareem Abdul-Jabbar sitting there in the middle. It's like, it's Brook Lopez. Brook Lopez. Why are we afraid of Brook Lopez? I mean, just go at him. He's good, but he's just not he's not entrenched in the Springfield over there in the Hall of Fame. So you were treating him like he was the best center ever to live, and you can't do that. You just have to go at him. And Giannis is good, but it's like you got to go at him. You got to make him play some defense. You can't live and die by the threes. You'll end up dying by it, because even in the heyday, Curry and boys over there still didn't take that many threes to win the couple of champions that they have. So they need to keep on hitting the paint. They need to do it more than they did last night. They did it. They came out with a vengeance. They made a statement. And now let's see. Now we're back in Milwaukee after, I can't believe they had a game Tuesday, not another game until Saturday. But
yeah,
let's see what happens. It's like it takes all momentum away from either team that won game two. So now it's almost like it's a clean slate. Boston's a good road team. Milwaukee's a good home team. So, I'm looking forward to the rest of the series. It's going to go seven games, no matter what. I think it's seven games. So, first team that wins. I agree with you, John. First team of three wins.
Yeah, definitely. You look at the Brown and Tatum. Couldn't have worked out better balancing. Brown had 30 points, six of them from six three-point field goals. He had 25 points in the first half. So Jason Tatum comes out with his 29 points and 19 of those in the second half. So he had Jaylen Brown carrying the team, and what was going to happen, because you knew Jaylen Brown wasn't going to get to duplicate what he did because they were going to defend him. Tatum stepped up, and it was the tale of both of those players taking control of the team. Jaylen Brown in half one, Jason Tatum in half two. And what a great offensive balance that was, Joe.
Oh, it was definitely offensive balance. But, you know, here's the question of it helps us out is, I know the coach and everybody at Barker said, no, there's nothing wrong with him. Yeah, Brown kept on reaching for his hamstring last night. Kept on reaching for it. Time at the end of the third quarter, claiming nothing was wrong. But I think this rest will help him because he had a hell of a first half. But this third quarter, he wasn't there. And Tatum scored his point. So it'll be good to see Marcus Smart back because White didn't have a terrific game. He did all right, but he didn't have a great game. And Peyton Pritchard, I mean, he's good for a few minutes, but he only played seven plays last night. So to have this, you know, you really shortened your bench exclusively last night.
You know, I look at Marcus Smart, and I know it's the quad, but and Crow and I talked about this. If he's not back Saturday, then there's something with the knee. And I still think there may be something with the knee. He's a tough SOB. And if it's a quad, depending on the severity of it, could be a Charlie horse, and they get pretty nasty. But if it's just a quad, and you and I agree, and JC agrees that he's a pretty tough character. He would have been in there last night, in my opinion, if it was just a quad injury, at least to give him 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 minutes. So that I'd be careful about this, that this may be something to be effective with the knee. And if that's the case, and I'll ask you the same thing, can there tell me in the series without Marcus Smart?
No.
Okay.
No.
Agree.
I love to say yes, but no, he can't go with seven plays because once you hit a little bit of foul trouble, you're hurting. Even last night, most of our plays had four fouls. Al had four, I think. JT had four. Brown had three. I mean, White had five. You can't go with seven. Seven's a tough rotation because then the guy's going to get tired. Even though Giannis seemed like he was physically tired at the end of the game last night. But, no, I'd love to say yes, but no. Milwaukee will win this game in six or seven if Marcus Smart does not come back.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's very important, at least on the defensive end. And, you know, you talked about Brook Lopez. You talked about Giannis, and they did a real good job against Giannis last night. But if you're Giannis and you're thinking to yourself, and it was Horford and Williams who neutralized Giannis, I'm not sure that's going to happen again. I think you're going to need the Time Lord at some point to do him. But what they did a nice job on Giannis. Here's Mike, all of a sudden you say to yourself, well, if they can do what they did to Durant, to Giannis, then they should win the series. But the one thing you have to watch out for if you're comparing those two, friends of mine have done it, and I say to them, yes, if they neutralize Giannis like they did Durant, they can win the series. But there's a better supporting cast that Milwaukee has, even without Chris Middleton, if they neutralize Giannis. And neutralizing Giannis is not going to be what they did to Durant. So you can neutralize Giannis, but I'm looking at the overall supporting cast in the ensemble, this Milwaukee team that can really come to play. And by the way, Milwaukee, please get a body on Grant Williams because when he's on the offensive end from each corner of the basket, he's shooting about 50%, and they just let him hang out there and drain it. So that's got to change. So it's going to be a good coaching matchup here as it goes on, but I'm pretty excited for the series. But again, and you gotta be concerned about Jaylen Brown with the hamstring because that can come back to haunt him too, Joe.
No knock on Giannis. I mean, no knock on Durant here.
No.
Giannis is a tougher guy to face in the middle. He will drive. He will not be afraid to drive to the basket, whereas Durant would seem like leery of going into the middle is more about shots. No. Giannis is going to drive to the basket, whether you got two, three guys, one guy on him. He's going to drive, and he's going to continue to drive. Whether he's hitting the shots or not, he's going to go in there, and he's going to pound the middle. Whether you like it or not, he's not going to give up on that. As much as you play defense against him, the man's not going to give up. The guy is hands down one of the best, if not the best player in the NBA right now. So you can play defense on him. You can hold him down. Why the Celtics played one-on-one is it stopped the open three looks from Connaughton. And the rest of the guys shouldn't be getting open three looks
right.
from the outside. So You lived and died with Giannis going to the middle, but you took away his second option. So, yeah, and I agree with you. Horford, and to be able to play like that, his age against Giannis, I'm like, Giannis should beat him up and spit him out. And he didn't. So it's like somebody's going to get into Giannis's ear, and he's going to come out with a renewed vengeance, I'm telling you, on Saturday. And you're going to see it, and you're going to see him with at least double digits, if not 15, 20 points in the first quarter alone Saturday. And I call that now because he's going to be a man on a mission.
Yep. And at least for one game, the Celtics stemmed some tide because, you know, you got to wonder, we haven't seen them face this much adversity in a playoff series like that. And they kind of looked like they were falling into some of those old habits, as we talked about last night. And they didn't. They came right out and they set the tone early, and it was wire-to-wire leading. And that's just what the doctor ordered for the team, to establish that rhythm. Maybe they rose up. Maybe they were inspired without their defensive leader in Marcus Smart. But I give them credit. And it's another one of those moments you see this team mature. You know what I mean? And I think with each game that passes, Joe, we're learning that Ime Udoka could be one hell of a damn coach.
Hey, look, maybe now we know why the Clays wanted Ime as their coach, because they knew he wouldn't put up with the crap, and he knew they could coach him up. So he's a well-liked coach. The players wanted him, and at first, you know, we questioned it back in November and December of maybe it wasn't a good idea to get somebody that the players wanted, but turns out this guy's pretty damn good as a coach, is making some decisions. So.
You got to win.
I just think even if Smart's out, I'm not using an excuse, you got to take this and go with it. And look, my objection right now is if Marcus is out, my goal is to get to the seventh game, because then anything can happen. My goal right now, get it to game seven. Anything can happen in the Garden. We've seen it before, and it could happen again.
Yep. You know, you got to wonder, too. I mean, the coaches, I mean, the Tatums and the Browns, they endorsed Udoka when they got him. But what the hell took him so long to buy in, and what did it take? It's almost like it happened that they flipped the switch. This team was 500 and hovering and looking everything but a playoff team at the midway point, 50 games through, and they just – something happened. I hope the story's told someday, because for a team that was supposedly endorsing him going into the season, it took him a long time to buy in.
Oh, it did, and it's like, so who got in their ear, and what made them realize that, like, maybe they finally realized to themselves that, like, no offense, maybe Marcus Smart realized that, like, I can't be the best player on this team. And it's like, so you forget we traded one of our point guards during the year who wanted to be the guy, and he was on the Lakers, and I can't think of his name. And by getting White instead of the other guy, Schroeder, it was actually a plus by getting rid of Schroeder, because Schroeder wanted to be the guy.
Yes, he had an attitude about him.
And he couldn't be the guy, not with Tatum and Brown on the team, not with Smart. So the best thing that could have been happened was addition by subtraction. As good as Schroeder was, or thinks he was, the best thing is get rid of him. And look, and the understatement of the year is getting Daniel Tice, because, look, he's not a great player, but he's a system player. He's been here. He gives you some tough minutes. He gives you the 10, 15, 20 minutes a game you need from a backup center. Just some tough minutes to give guys rest. And he gives you that attitude that the Celtics desperately needed from their role players. So that kind of helped. And they just finally, look, it took a lot of years of other guys that we've had, and I can't think of the guy's name that ended up on the Detroit Pistons, Chauncey Billups. It took Billups forever to get better as a player, and people forget that we drafted him. So maybe it just took Brown and Tatum a little bit longer to realize that, like, it's a team. There's no I in team.
Right.
And until you play as a team, you're not going anywhere.
And we knew the talent was there. They just didn't – it took them all this long to manifest it. And they're doing it at the right time and at the right moment because, you know, the longer they play better, the better Boston looks like as a destination and something you can build with. And going into this, man, and when they had Daniel Tice, I was wrong. I was like, Daniel – I kind of laughed at it. I think I might have done it on one of our shows. But Brad Stevens, what a transformation he's doing from going from coach, which he was darn good at, in my opinion, to the general manager, personnel guy, and you could argue he's right in the running for GM of the year, for personnel guy of the year, executive of the year. I mean, what a transition going on behind the scenes with Brad Stevens. It's incredible. And it's just all this it's all of a sudden this ship that was steering into oblivion, being the Celtics ship, it all of a sudden has righted itself and is charting a course for great destinations for the tropics. It's amazing what this team has done in a couple of months, from the front office all the way down to the players, the coaching staff, and what have you. I'm telling you, when you look back at this in a couple of years, the transformation, the facelift, whatever you want to call it, it's one of the better stories in this area in a long time.
So a guy named Thug would chuckle at me, but this could be the best series that these guys go through to help their transformation for next year. Because
yep.
Win or lose, they got to learn from this 7-game battle with the defending champions. Because if Milwaukee wins, Milwaukee's going to show you what it takes to win and have a willpower of a winner.
Right.
If you win, then it's like you went through the best to get to the next level. And it's like, so it's a, to me, it's a win-win situation. I don't like the idea of losing this series.
Right.
But you better learn losing. If you end up losing this series, you better learn from it, because you're learning on the go of how the gut check of how a team is going to react and how they became a champion. And they're not hated. Milwaukee's not a hated team. They're just a lunch pail type team that goes out there, does their job. They got the Greek Freak, and it's like you go from there. But it's a good supporting cast. So
yep.
You learn how to play. You're watching how teams play. So either way, I like this. I like this series. I like where it's going. And I'm going to sit back, relax, and I haven't watched this kind of a series in a long time. Of like, it could be a good series.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, watch out for this Miami team. I'd love to see Boston-Miami in the conference final, because this Miami team, and I'm on the record by saying Miami would represent the East. That was a couple months ago, but I'm going to stick with that because I think they're well-coached, and I think they match up well against Boston. But, you know, my last thought – on the Bucks, and if you're a pure basketball fan, there's really no hatred here. There's no hatred with Giannis, because you know, you have LeBron, who can be polarizing. Kevin Durant, we know, can be polarizing. Doncic isn't at their level yet. Ja Morant of Memphis is on the verge, but he's not there yet at all. But it's tough from a basketball standpoint, not only to hate Milwaukee because they're fun to watch, but Giannis is such a nice guy and great character. And when we saw when he shined brightly in the finals last year, he's a pretty stand-up dude, and Giannis is one of those guys you root for, and you can't hate as a basketball fan, even if you're rooting for the Celtics or the Bucks. So it's a good role model. It's a good face of the NBA, Joe, and I'm really happy that I think he's elevating himself to that best player on the hardwood.
Oh, I totally agree with you 100% there. It's like, you can't hate a guy that's given his all, that's playing his heart out, that is, he's a level above everybody else. But he doesn't have that self-entitlement rift to him that a lot of the players you see have. LeBron.
Yeah.
He doesn't expect it. He's not yelling at his players. He's helping his team win. So, like I said, either way, I'm looking forward to this. Definitely.
There we go. You got it. So that's Joe Foran, Johnny Sunchips here. We've got about 15 minutes left in the show. Talk a little basketball. Thanks to Jarvis Green for joining us to talk a little NFL and his exploits with Ocean 97. And check out the app for Chef to You. Again, go on Ocean97.com and see what Jarvis is all about. And I tried the pâtés, man. They're dynamite. And it's coming up to the year where you have barbecue and you're outdoors. Those pâtés can make a meal even that much better. So check out Ocean97.com. If you haven't already, get there. After the show, of course. After you listen.
Try the lemon one because it's got lemon.
Yeah, it is. I like the jalapeno. I like the jalapeno shrimp. I baked some cornbread, put the jalapeno shrimp pate in there. Boom, bake it. It comes out nice and fresh. But hey, experience it. You'll love it. Guaranteed. Lock it in. But he's Joe Foran. Johnny Sun Chips here for you for about 15 more minutes on Blog Talk Radio, the Going Old School show. Chips and Joe tonight, minus Mr. Crow. He'll be back next week.
Boston sports, and not the Red Sox.
Give your take on the Bruins. I do want to talk a little baseball, though. Yeah, give your take on the Bruins. And a must-win tonight.
and they must win where they outplayed the competition in the first period, part of the second period, and couldn't get the damn puck past the goalie. What? That's a thing that I've listened to over the last few years. Did everything but. No, a couple of weak goals by Olmark, and like, oh, you two Rask haters, I'll stick the middle finger up to you guys. You'd be all over Rask about the freaking loss the other night. But no,
yep.
Everybody's saying, well, it's not the goalie's fault. It's not the goalie. You gave up two weak goals. End of discussion, boys. So if you're going to bark about one goalie, you better bark about the other goalie, because it's like same thing. It's like you can't, in the playoffs, you can't give up a weak goal. You got to get that puck. You got to finish. You got to go to the dirty areas in the ice and be willing to take a hit and willing to put the puck in the net. The guy gave up some juicy rebounds, or where were the guys? They weren't around the net. They weren't crashing the net. You got to do more crashing. Look, Carolina's a physical team. You got to be more physical. It's like we've been outscored 21-2. I get it, but it's the only down 1-0. But if it's a must-win, if any proportions, it is tonight. So the Bruins better get their butts in gear, play a 60-minute game, and win. Because if not, like somebody said earlier to me, the coach's job is on the line, the GM's job is on the line. They don't
yeah.
win the series. There's going to be a revamping in Boston.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to take it a step further. I know they're on the hot seat, but I think at least Cassidy will survive another year, because I think you still may have another year with some of the core. But there's changes to be made. So if they lose this series, I think he could go, but I think they may give him one more year. But I'll tell you right now, he is firmly on the hot seat as a coach if they lose the series. And by listening to some of the stuff all year long, he seems like he has a sense of urgency, taking some of the players off the task, almost like, oh, my God. You know, he realizes that his moment at behind the bench in Boston could be coming to a close. Let me tell you something, though. Carolina has outscored the Bruins this year 21-2. I'm just going to say this. I know they were missing some of the players when they played Carolina, some of the players now, some of the key players. Marchand was out for one. Bergeron was out for a couple more. But make no mistake, people, if Tuukka Rask was in the Nets those games, they wouldn't have been outscored 21-2. So, again, they lose tonight, this series is over in five. Guaranteed. Have to win tonight. But, right, this team, Joe, when we see them fail, how many years have we gone on saying they play two periods, they can't play three periods? You need 60 strong minutes of hockey. They seem to take these lapses. I don't know if it's in their DNA as a franchise the past 10 years, but they come out like gangbusters in the first, they'll kind of sleepwalk through the second, and bang, there'll be gangbusters in the third. In the playoffs against teams like Carolina, who are really good, and God forbid you move on with Florida, the Rangers, you got to put 60 minutes of hockey together just to give yourself a chance.
Yep, I agree. It's like, look, the teams aren't going to get any easier if you get past these guys anyways. It's going to get harder. So it's like, it's going to be, look, can they do it? Will they do it? I think not. So it's like, I may have picked the Bruins to win this series, but I got Carolina in six. Unless they find some miracle out there, I got Carolina in six.
Yeah, I got Carolina in six, but that's, if they lose tonight, it's over. It's over sooner than that. But Carolina's just too strong. And they, I mean, they don't even have their goalie in there. Anderson's out, but that's a good Carolina team. And you have some really offensive juggernauts with them in Florida. Just exciting. And moving to another series, hey, I'm not down on, you know, I love stories, I love tradition, I love history, and if there's a God in hockey heaven, the Toronto Maple Leafs beat the Tampa Bay Lightning. I just want to see, for two reasons, Tampa Bay go down, maybe they're going through some stuff. I'm not a big Lightning fan, obviously, but I have a soft spot for Toronto because they're good and they're snake bitten, and that's all they have up there. And it's been 1967 was the last year they won a Stanley Cup before the expansion. So I'm rooting for Toronto. I like the tradition. I like the history. One of the greatest franchises in all sports. People are talking about, they're a laughing stock now because it's been a while. So I'm rooting for Toronto to beat them. That's me.
Oh, by the way, just one passing thought on that before we go to baseball. Hey, Connecticut, why can't you get teams like that?
What, do you mean like the Whalers?
Yep, that's the Carolina Hurricanes. That's
right.
The old hop.
Yep.
So
played in a mall. They played in a mall. Their rink was in a mall in Hartford. How about that?
Yep.
The Whalers. Wow. Gordie Howland. Gordie Howland's played. Gordie Howland and his two sons played for the Hartford Whalers at one time. See, this is why they call you and I old school. But that's okay.
All right, John. I know you've been chomping at the bit, and let's go the last 10 minutes with the team that you feel needs to do something and do something quick.
Yep. You know what? And it was a win last night, which is good. Silver lining is, but I'm gonna be that dark. I'm gonna be the dark cloud because the offense came through against an Angels team that's really good. Pitching was well. Michael Wach is pitching really well. I like it. But the offense is provided by two people that should be doing it. We talked about J.D. Martinez and Rafael Devers. Nothing's changed.
Yep.
I'm still panicking. I like the win. I like it. It's a step up, but it's got to be manifested, and nothing's changed because those are the guys who are going to get you there. The supporting cast has to come up big, and they didn't last night again. They were bailed out. I like it. I'm okay with the win. But you have a Yankee team that is on an 11-game winning streak, and say what you want. Again, you fall behind. It's going to be things. So if fans heard my rant last night, I'm pushing the panic button. I've not stopped pushing it. I'm leaning on it still. It's there. To what degree? No. Win some more. But I want to see some of these guys stepped up, Joe, like we talked about last night. Some of the role players, the key case, the bottom of the order, some the bullpen and stuff. They still need to figure it out. And one game does not figure anything out moving forward. Do I love the win? Yes. Your thoughts and where we go.
So I got a question for you then.
Yeah.
What do you do with Christian Vasquez? Because I think it's time to move on from Christian Vasquez behind the plate because he's not the catcher you need. He's not the guy that you want. Granted, he's a great clubhouse guy, but his on the field, no. He's not the catcher you need. He's like, I think it's time to move on. It's like they said, Plawecki went out there and calmed the pitcher down yesterday and because he had walked two guys and it was Owen was 2-0 on the next batter, Trout. And
right.
He turned around while Plawecki talked to him, struck him out. So is it time to move on from Christian Vasquez? As much as he's a great presence in the clubhouse, sometimes that presence in the clubhouse doesn't outweigh the fact that you're not producing on the field and it hurts the quality of the team.
Agree. And Plawecki, you know, is good in the clubhouse. He's the one who kind of garnered and kind of created all that laundry cart stuff. So he's got the clubhouse in his back pocket. And he catches, I believe he catches Evaldi, and that's your stud right now. I think you're going to see a gradual move, Joe. I agree with you. Was it 2019 where Vasquez had like 20-some homers and he had that career season at the plate? We didn't expect him to do that, but he is a walking out. And when you can't, When you're a liability a little bit defensively like he is, I think he's got a good arm. You're okay. If you're a good defensive catcher, you're okay if you're mediocre at the plate. But, I mean, if Plawecki's giving him any sort of pop and he's good behind the plate, you need offense too. And you may need to shake it up a little bit and change it. If you're putting Bobby Dahl back behind Francisco Godera right now, I mean, now is the time to experiment. You got to shake it up a little bit without draining the whole roster. So, yeah, I mean, Vasquez could move to first if he has to eventually, the way that's moving. But, yeah, I think it's time to move on at the catching spot. I agree because it's about the battery, mate. And why not, Joe? Is any idea a bad idea right now with this team?
The problem is, as they would say on radio today, is like you've got nothing. You got Wong down in AAA, so you have nothing. Mm-hmm. Deep down inside tells me that this team is in for a major, somewhat of an overhaul come mid-season, and I don't see him hesitating to trade off some of the pieces and get different and to get different things because you can't wait to the end of the year to make some changes. You can't flounder all year. This is Boston. This isn't Tampa Bay, and you better make some changes because the fans will turn on you in a heartbeat. So they need to make changes now, and like I said, the panic button, before July hits, you better make some changes and do something because you can't let this get any worse because it gets ugly in Boston quick. You know that.
Yep. Three untouchables on this roster right now, not including the pitching, are me, and not necessarily in this order. Untouchables right now as far as trading Trevor Story because of the contract. Obviously, Devers, and I think Sander Bogaerts. Those are my three untouchables right now. I'm based on just what I think they need to build around because the building blocks. And Trevor Story, I think, has got some good years. But I don't think you. I think you may only see two out of those three guys retained. And it pains me to say that I don't think the team has any intention of signing Sander Bogaerts. And that right now really ticks me off. And you looking at it, if they're right where they are now, come July or August, dare I say they trade Bogaerts?
If you trade Bogaerts, you best make sure you get a boatload, and I mean a boatload of prospects, high-level prospects from a team, because that's the only way I would be semi-okay with that trade, is you get a boatload of prospects. Not one prospect, not two, I'm talking three, because that boy is worth every penny that you could pay him, and it would be sad in Boston. It would be reminiscent of Fred Lynn, Carlton Fisk leaving in the 80s of letting Alexander Bogaerts go. And that's going old.
Yeah, no question it is, but that's the thing. And I'm not sure because Heinblum last year got accolades because of who he brought in. But I was talking to JC last night. I think when I'm starting to look back and thinking that them making the playoffs last year, as exciting as it was for the Red Sox fan base and the region here, because it's great when the teams play meaningful games in September and October in the world of Major League Baseball, we may look back at that as maybe a worst-case scenario, and maybe that shouldn't have happened because it kind of like bought him some more time, and it made Heinblum and the organization say, okay, our idea is working, when maybe it's not, because 1 year in, you don't want to get – I mean, it doesn't translate. And so maybe we're looking at last year, Joe, as – maybe something that shouldn't have happened, and maybe something that maybe will set us back because what we believe in this team going to the future and being a small market team. In other words, worst case scenario.
No, I agree with you. It's like it may have set us back by winning. It set you back because it made you think that they played above their heads, played above their means, and gave them time to think that we're going places, and you're really not. Look, I get it. The farm system is up and coming. It's getting there. But like I said, this is Boston. You can't – fans are not going to allow you to hover around 500 for more than a half a year. They're not going to. Their rabid fan base around here is not going to change. So you best know that you came here. There's no excuse in the book that you can give these fans to say why we're hovering, because they're not going to buy it. They're not going to be freaking smelling the shit that you're shoveling because they don't want to hear it. I know
right.
I wouldn't want it.
Right. Sox player, the Angels study at Fenway, Garrett Whitlock versus Reed Detmers. So Whitlock, we'll see what happens to him because I'm still not sure where they want to go with him or not, where his value lies. But he's arguably, in my opinion, the best pitcher in the pen. So we'll see. But where are they going to do? And that's part of my dilemma with the panic button. But, Joe, we're up against it, man. But good talking to you, dude. And a big Bruins game, big Red Sox. So we're going to be banging back and forth. And you and I will probably be texting maybe with JC. And hopefully the Bruins win and keep the Sox going where they are. But always a pleasure, Joe, man. Good talking to you.
So what do you know? We had two blog talks in 1 week. All three of us on. We're going places with no joke. Oh, wait, I didn't say that.
Oh,
Johnny. Johnny, always get the dog. You know I got to get that one jab in a day.
I got you, man. Parting shots by Joe Friend. Always a pleasure, Joe.
Johnny, always a good time. All right, have a good
all
night.
All right, man. You got you too. Thanks to Jarvis Green for joining us, as always. Thanks to Joe Friend. We'll be back in our regular six. You'll see us every Wednesday now, so lock it in, usually around 6 o'clock, but we'll make the appointment and listen to us live or on tape, but we'll always be here. Sometime on Wednesday evening. So to go on old school show, Chips and Joe for hand on you this Wednesday evening, teaching everyone of you out there, take care, stay well, be safe, enjoy your sports, and courtesy to each and every one of you. Be well.
Peace out.